On today's podcast, Art During Wartime, we'll explore the role comedy plays in Ukrainian culture and during the war. Our guest is Ukrainian comedian Anton Timoshenko. Thanks for being on our podcast.
Yeah,
Anton,
thanks to invite me. That's a big pleasure to be here.
Also, first of all, thank you for all the weapons you gave to Ukraine.
Absolutely. It's all on me.
When I see any kind of people from America, I always say this. My sentence starts from this. Thank you for all this weapon.
and especially those Patriot missiles that are protecting the city.
Yes, and that's the reason why we can do this podcast in
Exactly,
Kyiv, not in the basement or in underground station. Yeah, like it was at the beginning.
Well, our goal of this podcast is to remind Americans why Ukrainians are fighting, and they're fighting for their culture, and comedy is very much part of culture.
We tried. I don't know, not all, I just like this message, like, but what about that taxes, American taxes go to this war, a lot of taxes, but as I understand, it's not like a big amount of money, right?
If you're talking gosh, it's less than 5% of our defense budget. Yeah. And we're degrading the Soviet, the Russian army.
Nice price to destroy Russia.
Good investment.
Like a discount in the mall.
Exactly.
Pay only 5% to destroy authoritarian regime in Russia.
Exactly. And a lot of those weapons, you know, I believe the ATACMS even were scheduled to be depleted completely. And now we're able to give them to Ukraine.
That means depleted?
We've got a new missile system.
Oh yeah, it's old
and,
one. Like
yeah, it's an I older see, system, yeah. And we've got a stockpile that was going to be destroyed essentially. But now we can put them to very good use.
Sorry, I'm just starting to talk about weapon. Maybe you want to talk about
we should
culture.
Probably talk about.
You know, this is basically Ukrainians who just like to talk about weapons. This is how my life changed. Yeah, I didn't like to talk about weapons like 3 years ago, but now all my life is around weapons, how to buy some stuff to army, how to raise more money to buy this stuff. Like from my last special, I raised like 2 million hryvnias, and all this money I put to the Serhii Pritula Foundation. And he bought some British...
The foundation? What foundation?
Serhii Pritula Foundation.
What is that?
Oh, like in Ukraine, we have two big foundation that help Ukrainian army, like Come Back Alive Foundation and Serhii Pritula.
Oh, Come Back Alive, I've heard of
this. Yeah, the first one. And Serhii Pritula is the second big one in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And they bought a lot of stuff. Like, they can't... Like, for example, this foundation, Pritula Foundation, they bought a satellite for Ukraine.
Incredible.
Not like a... I mean, they... How is... I'm not a big expert in buying of satellites, but as I understand, they rent the satellite for like a couple of years or something to help our army to see.
It's Russians. Not Elon Musk's satellite, I hope.
No, if it was Elon Musk's satellite, they would charge $8 an hour, you know, all some kind of shit that he likes to do with people, because I don't know why he need more money. Like, he looks like the guy who has enough money, but no.
Well, Anton, I'd like to talk about how you got started in comedy. Where did it all begin, and why did you become a comedian?
I think it a little bit differs from American career. Well, I remember in my university, first, like on the first course of university, I don't remember who was the first, Doug Stanhope or George Carlin, but I remember like for sure that I watched Doug Stanhope, one of the first one, maybe the second or the first. And when I realized that the man on the stage can tell this kind of joke and people like laugh, and I was like, okay, I also like to be aggressive for some. I remember his first joke, but I'm not sure I can translate it in English. I'll try. Like, I remember this one of the first joke I heard in stand-up. He talked about abortion. And he said that he found on his car like this photos from the people who against the abortion, and the photos of this embryon, right? Mm-hmm. And the sign that you're killing a man, like it's a live man. And Doug Stanhope said, okay, if it's a real person, if it's killing a real person, why you put me his naked photo on the car? You should put this black lines on his penis or on his tits, because it's a real human. This is like a pornography now. And I was like, this is a nice move. And I remember I fall in love in this feeling that you can turn around the situation and show to these people that they also could be like incorrect in this situation. Yeah, and I had a in my university, in Taras Shevchenko University in Kyiv, there was a show, like, this is so funny to tell now in English, the man of the university, how to say, it's like a beauty show or something like Miss Universe, but for men's in the university. Right. And each faculty, I studied on a philosophy faculty, should take a part in it. And my faculty, like, choose me because nobody else wants to take a part in this contest. So I went there, and there was like talent, a lot of the episodes when you should compete with other guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes, you should show your talent. And I, for that moment, I only, like, I can't thin or dance, but I wrote some jokes and I perform on our students, like, parties or something. And I think, well, I can try to stand up, like, first time, because it looks like not so difficult. And I wrote some jokes, one lines, you know, and my show was, like, super good, like, how to say, I bumped the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult to say in Ukraine now, sorry. Yeah. It was super good. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I could be a comedian. And I took this material and I go to open mic. Not like, it was a contest where my faculty support me. And then I decided to check this material on, like, neutral people, like open mic in Kyiv. And it was like silence for all my performing.
Oh, no.
I was like, okay, maybe it's not so easy as I thought. And I, like, start to think maybe it's not my way. But then, like, I tried to write something new jokes, and I started from one lines. So I wrote a lot of one lines, and people start to laugh and understand, okay, it worked like this. But then I understand that one lines is too, it's difficult to have one hour show is one lines. Like, and even when I see someone like Anthony Jeselnik, it's a little bit boring for me. Like, for me, like, the greatest one line artist is the, oh, I forget his name. This curly hair, you know, long curly hair. Stephen Wright. Yeah.
Stephen Wright. Yes. Yes. With that monotone voice.
Yeah,
that he uses.
He's the best one in one lines. And I start to write not one lines, but the beats. Like, the, it's in English. It's also beats, right? The beat.
Yeah. Bits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Start to write beats, mm-hmm. And it, like, I have been doing comedy for 10 years now. Yeah, and like first 4 years, 5 years was like not super good, but then I became one of the most, maybe in top 10 of Ukrainian comedians, and now I'm maybe one of the best one. I can say that because I, the first comedian who has a show in Palace of Ukraine, like 3,600 people.
Congratulations on that. Yeah, that's a big deal for a comedian.
Is that one
of the first times ever a comedian?
But I must say, like, yeah, I also, like, I had this dream in my life to have a big show, but now during wartime, you had this show, and I gave all the money for charity to the army, and this war context, it just killing all this, you know, happy vibe of this achievement. I was like, yeah, my comedy is a nice instrument to raise more money, and it's a big show, and a lot of people say this is great, but I don't know how to explain. Like, I just start to lose these feelings of how happiness or something. You just, I feel only like, yeah, I finished some kind of work and I should do more work to raise more money, to buy something, more stuff. Because, it's always difficult to talk about this even in Ukrainian language. But in English, I'm trying to find the word how to describe the feeling. It feels like emptiness in your body. So you're like, yeah, I had a big show and people were laughing. This is super nice, but the situation of war is continuing. So let's do something more.
How would you?
Sorry for this depressive moment.
No. I really.
We should do funny podcast about comedy and jokes, all this stuff. And I just from the beginning start talking about difficult life.
Sorry. Well, no, that's absolutely fine. I mean, this is a podcast, art during wartime. So I mean, obviously, your craft, your art is impacted by the war.
Yes, it's so difficult to exist 2 years of war, and I I'm there, like, I only can roll jokes about the stuff that's around me. Like, it's difficult to me to joke about something else, so I'm joking about war. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult, you know, to find new angles, like 2 years of war. You joked about that, about the Russians, about soldiers, about some weapons, blah, 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 about geopolitical stuff, about United Nations, about other stuff, about Germany, you know. And then you had this 1 hour special and you should do one more special, and I should continue to talk about war, because I feel stupid when I'm talking about relationship, or like, oh, you know, there's a big difference between men and women. Oh my God, let's talk about that. It's so nice comedy. And it's so stupid to talk about that during war. So I continue to try to find new angle. And when you reflection about war all the time, you feel like sad. And most of my, how my jokes born right now, I'm just sitting, trying to find new material, thinking about war. I'm become super sad and I'm just close the laptop, and I continue doing this for like a week, and maybe on the last day, a couple of jokes will come in this darkness.
If you think about it, I don't know of any other comedian working while there's a war going on. I think you are in a very, very unique position.
I only saw this Louis C.K. TV series, and one of the episodes was like he performed in Iraq or Afghanistan, don't remember. It was a nice episode.
Honestly. Right, but he traveled there to entertain soldiers.
I think it's not documentary, right?
This is different. What you're doing is comedy in your home country while war is going, while you're being invaded. And I don't think anyone, I can't think of another example of a comedian in that kind of situation.
This is the reason why for me it's become, I liked very much comedians from USA, from Britain, from the, I like as I said, I start to love comedy because I saw Carlin or Stanhope, and I like also Tom C.K. and like Mark Birbiglia or Chris Rock, like a lot of the guys, Stuart Lee. But now I notice that it's so, for me, this is a little bit boring to watch any kind of special, because when they start the beat, like about some kind of problems, and I'm watching and think, it's not a problem.
That's
like,
not
honestly.
Compared to what
and
you're
because
going
to the like only last special I liked was Mark Maron special from Dark to Bleak, or from Bleak to Dark. I don't remember exactly, because he talking about death all the time. It is super dark, and I was like, yeah, this is kind of material I like now because it's close to my.
I can see that you life. And Mark Maron. Yeah, you have similar styles. Well, I wanted to ask you, what do you consider your style of comedy?
Oh, that's difficult. Like even now when I have this big show in Palace of Ukraine, I'm not sure I found my voice in comedy, because a lot of the guys in Ukraine said like I'm politician comedian, because I like to talk about political problems, society problems. And when I started doing like more comedy about this, a lot of my colleagues said it is boring and you're just talking about, you know, nobody care about like some jokes about juridicity reforms. Juridicity, yeah, I say it correct?
The court. Judicial, sorry. Yes.
I had jokes about judicial
reforms
in Ukraine. And people were like, come on.
That is an odd topic.
Yeah, it's a hard topic, but I had a couple of jokes. And they said, that's boring. And yeah, for me, it was a little difficult to perform, because after the guy who talking about sex, I'm trying to talk about problems in cards, and people like, come on. So I mixed up my material, add some but on the basic themes, jokes about basic themes. And then in the end, I start talking about something like about ecological problems, for example. It's what is more important for me. And now, like, I think I found this balance when I know how to talk about difficult themes, but with, you know, with easy form, like in this, like in my last special, even, like for me, I I'm not a comedian who play a lot on the stage. I like to talk. I have like a powerful like punchline or one line or like the powerful text, and I using this. I'm not like dancing, jumping like other comedians can do.
Or Chris Rock, who goes back and forth. Or
Chris Rock, even he looks like on his last special, I never noticed it before, because he spoken like like the priest, like, you know, like a priest. He just
true, a Baptist minister, yeah.
Like repeating one set up for three times, like, Chris, I understand. I even know the punchline right now. Please continue. No, he repeated one. But maybe this is a nice style, you know, to like beat your comedy in the.
It's very intense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's just pushing it in you. And in last special, I tried to, you know, add some activity, like I even have like anime, how to say autogresh in English, I even don't know, like actor's moment in your special. Okay, how you say it in English? Like if you had a joke, but when you start to move and yell, and do you have one word to describe this moment?
I can't think of, I don't think so. What is it in Ukrainian, the word?
Vidigrash.
A rush of...
Yeah, like...
Emotions actor, or...
Yeah, yeah, like, okay. Like, all the time Bill Burr do, like, this emotional moment. I start to do more of this, and that...
Do you like that style? Does your fans react to
I'm
that?
I'm just worried about that maybe I have this also, how to say it in English, like, syndrome samozvanca.
A syndrome of...
I'm thinking that this Palace of Ukraine is just a lucky moment, but for real moments, I'm not deserve this.
But don't all true artists feel that way at some point?
That's why I start to think maybe when I'm just talking my jokes, it could be boring. So I need to do something. So I add one dance, like small dance in my special, some parody on anime cartoon, uh-huh. Like Sailor Moon. I don't know if you know this one. And I'm just trying to put something, but this is the reason why I don't know what is my voice, because from my point of view, you just should be yourself in your comedy. And if you want just to talk, like calm talking with people and give your jokes, and a lot of comedians do like that, it could work, but I'm afraid maybe I should be more active. So like, I know, I'm just trying to find the best way to get more laughs. And for example, I'm afraid to perform in a silence, but I'm a professional comedian for now, as I understand, probably. So I should be okay with like, it is 1 minute of silence, but I'm always so nervous and I'm trying to put one more joke. My psychotherapist said I should like ruin one of my performance. I should...
Specifically.
Yeah, I specifically should ruin my special. Like it should be my plan to ruin my performance to start to feel okay with some kind of silence, you know? Because I'm always start to improvise with people or try to find comedy in the moment. Because I think professional comedian shouldn't be afraid of silence moment or something on the stage.
I have to say, I listened to your comedy, the English versions of your comedy, coming here from Warsaw on the train, and I probably was laughing so loud I, you know, got the attention of my next door travelers. And there was one joke that really, there was a few that I really liked, but one that I thought was funny because I'm from the music industry myself, and when you mentioned that. You thought the German entry for Eurovision was really good and we're sure Ukraine will give you votes, but not right now. We're waiting for that. I just thought that was a really clever,
in the moment.
can you talk a little bit about that joke? Because I really understand why you told that.
Yeah, I wrote this joke because Germany like always promised to support Ukraine with a lot of weapons, but then they always say, "Yeah, we will give you some weapons, but maybe in the end of the autumn, but maybe in the end of the winter." I also had another kind of the same joke on my social medias. Like we had a piece of news that Olaf Scholz came to Ukraine. And I said, I hope Olaf Scholz will come to Ukraine on the vokzal. On the railway station. And I hope he will try to call a taxi. And the taxis will say, yeah, I will come. But maybe in the end of the autumn, I think. But I should say that after that, Germany gave a lot of stuff for Ukraine. But just like a year after the war began. And also I must say one of the this was so fun in Instagram one of the this there is a music group, it's called Anna Marin Kate or something, like, you know, this guy with like
where are they from? Germany? Or?
Yeah, Anna Marin Kate, as I remember, like a long. You don't know this name? Oh, this. Like they. Could I put it on
yes,
the.
Yes.
Like this musician, he's famous one, like musician, and he. I see the sign on Instagram, like repost, and from this musician, I was like, no way. And he saw this piece of the joke about Eurovision, and he shared it in his Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, this German musician. Left from himself. the famous one of this is this one. They make a cover on
of
this.
Of Tom's Diner. This is in Vega. Yeah.
And this is the guy. Where is his voice? Come on. Stop do tarantara. Okay, sorry. I just this is the main guy in this group. He wrote to me and he reposted my comedy. Like, if you know Anna Marin Kate, you know them. If you don't know, now you know.
Now I know. I've always been a fan of comedians my whole life. My favorite comedian is Richard Pryor.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I think is the Richard greatest Pryor. Of all time. But what do you think of Richard Pryor?
This is one of the
material?
Best comedian I ever heard, and he's special in Sunset Strip. This is type of like when somebody in Ukraine asked me, "Okay, is comedy in Ukraine existing? Like, I don't know, maybe I mean stand up comedy, maybe 15 years. Like, it's young genre in Ukraine." We have something like prototype of stand-up comedy in Ukraine, but like in modern way, it exists in like 15 years. And if somebody asking me, Anton, from which comedian I should start to watch Ukrainian stand-up, I say, you better start from American ones comedian to understand how it should work, mm-hmm. like in an ideal situation. And then you can watch Ukrainian comedians and see who trying to do nice stand-up and who just do stupid jokes for TikTok, for example. Because a lot of comedians also, they, from my point, they try to find this easy way to get awareness and just do some clips in Instagram, Reels, TikTok, and only jokes about, like this guy, like this, he like become a big star, Reef, as I remember, I forget his name, Reef, like a super handsome guy. He also had photo with Dave Chappelle. So like he has millions of people on Instagram because he do nice improvisations with the audience.
All right.
But when I saw his special, I was like, this is not even funny at all. Just stupid jokes about dildos or something. No. And for me, when somebody asking me about what he's thinking about, what for you, what means like a real true comedy, and Richard Pryor, one of these guy, because when I saw his Sunset Strip, I was shocked that how deeply he talked about his people, about black people. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember he's super funny. And so I think for the, like, which year it was, like 1984 or something?
Yeah, it was right after he had caught himself on fire, freebasing cocaine.
Documentary
And it was a great comeback for him because he almost died.
I remember his joke that he said that he performed in a prison. Yeah, for like for black people,
uh-huh.
and he talking about this like, yeah, perform for my people in prison, blah 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 blah, and then he said, and what I wanted to say to you that this is good that these people in prison. I must say they're super bad guys, and I was like, oh my god, this is so
only
rough.
He can say that.
Yeah, only he can say. But even for him, like it's like it's danger thing, and. When he talked his story about how he traveled to Africa and that in Africa nobody used the N-word, and he said probably we using N-word here and that's why other people use it N-word. So maybe I will stop using N-word in my speech because in Africa nobody do it and there is no N-word. And I was like, yes, this is like, it's not only comedy, it's also research or some kind of
idea that you want to share with people. And for me, this is true comedy. That's why I like Richard Pryor. That's why I like Dave Chappelle or Stuart Lee. Louis C.K., like, he sometimes he said deep stuff, but I don't like that he's kind of plays with people and he's just, you know, in the, like, I'm waiting for some kind of thought and he just started with the joke about, you know, the porno video or something, or the end with some like super stupid jokes. I was like, come on. In the middle was like super nice and deep. And then, I know this is how the way he playing with his auditory. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I like a little bit, how to say, I like these boring comedians who trying to talk about right thing, like George Carlin also.
I've always thought that comedians were a different breed of people. In fact, a lot of people think that comedians are the most intellectual of all entertainers.
Thank
because
you.
Timing. and I know I'm really building up your ego here, but I really am a fan. But timing, comedic timing, is one of the most important things, right? The timing of your joke and the rhythm of it. And you have to be so smart to be able to do that.
A lot of the features should work in one way to become a successful comedian. The timing, the way how you give your joke, the way how you write. Yeah, there are a lot of stuff. You mean timing? What from your point of view, what means timing?
Very, very quick, clever, sharp responses that are deeply humorous and cut right to the bone, but on time, not too slow, not too fast. Just the right.
It's like a sex, like to find this orgasm with your audience. Yeah. If you're talking about comedy and timing, I want to give you one of my joke. I try to translate it because we are talking to American audience and in Twitter, a lot of the in X. I will call it Twitter. Okay, I don't like X. I like
no,
Twitter.
No, Twitter's fine. Yeah, I don't even. Yeah.
People like this, like passages about Ukrainians or Nazis or something. And I think I have funny one joke. Even for Americans, will understand that. In my special, I start a couple of jokes about Zelensky, and I said, from my point of view, the main feature, the main good side of Zelensky as a president in Ukraine now, because his biography ruined all the Russian propaganda, because Russian propaganda said, you are Nazis in Ukraine. And I was like, okay, we are Nazis with a comedian president who is a Jew and who won Dancing with the Stars show. How do you think it's difficult, how to say in English? just imagine how difficult it is to become a leader of Nazi when you won Dancing with the Stars show, when the whole country watching you dancing in this, you know, in this shiny suit, on this, funny pants. Uh-huh. And then what kind of Nazi will follow you? Like dances Nazis or someone? This is insane. I like this one.
I think comedians around the world are probably just so proud of President Zelensky because he's one of theirs. He's one of their guys that is now running a country. And even the people he surrounded himself with in his administration are from show business,
which is so interesting.
I know not all, but some very key players. And it's just interesting how he has brought the entertainment industry to politics. And to governing.
Just to notice that Americans should understand that we in Ukraine, we don't like a lot of the guys who surround Zelensky.
Oh, really?
And we know, yeah. Like
even the show business guys.
I'm from the show business. There is no people on key position now from the show business. But
I thought his chief of staff was the wasn't he from the film industry?
Andriy Yermak.
Yes.
Yeah, they connected to the industry in some way. But they are not from this because, like, we also have the guys in the parliament from his shows. But this guy's the shows.
Right,
it's like more. Yeah, they connect with show business, but not so direct as Zelensky or his like close friends. And yeah, for example, I don't like Andriy Yermak or some of the guys who worked in his office. And Ukrainians always keep in touch with the guys who in government. That's why.
What do you mean keep in touch? What do you mean by that?
Oh, how to say it? Not keep in touch, but like we always follow.
Keep an eye on.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, keep in touch. Oh my God. Keep in touch is not the the best description. Yeah, keeping our eyes on these guys.
Because you don't trust them.
Yeah. I understand why he surrounds himself with friends, because you want to believe someone who is your friend. But sometimes we understand that we have like professional people with nice biography, with no scandals, who is not corrupted, who is don't have a kind of business, like activists or just nice people who should be there. But he choose sometimes this kind of people, but sometimes his friends. And I understand he tried to find this balance because Zelensky is really depend on the people's opinion. He likes sociology, all this stuff. He wants to be loved by mm-hmm. people. That's nice feature of his character. But also, like I didn't vote for Zelensky on president election, and I thought we should have more experienced guy. But yeah, in this kind of war, in the, how I said in my special, it's just like content war, because modern war is a war when you should do a lot of content, you know, these stupid videos on Instagram, yeah. TikTok, and we put our war on TikTok trends. And only this is the way how we can involve people in our problem. We should be interesting. And if you just die, nobody cares. You should die in some interesting way that Angelina Jolie will come to see how you die here. It should be interesting. In this kind of world, this kind of guy who can work with people, who can joke sometimes, that's a good option to get like the engagement rate of Ukrainian war is high because we have an actor as a president.
That's a good point. But comedians, like we were talking about Richard Pryor, right?
Yeah.
And President Zelensky, comedians who also are able to act on TV or film, able to act, become actors.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
It seems to me comedians are very, you know, well-rounded, versatile, almost able to do anything in the entertainment arena. I mean, as far as because of the because of their intellectualism.
Yeah. To be a comedian is not an easy job, and you should be flexible, and this is important when you, and also like Zelensky, he not only like comedian actor, he was the main guy who managed his this Quartal 95, this one of the is the biggest Ukrainian how to say company who creates any different types of content, like films.
Oh, it's like a film production company.
Yeah, it's a big film production, and he managed all this stuff. And I know, like, I have friends who work there, and they said that Zelensky even, like, they have a lot of the
scriptwriters.
Yeah, in this company. But before the big show, Zelensky should check all the script by himself to make sure everything is fine.
Wow, so yeah, perfectionist.
Yeah, professional. And this management level is important to... Yeah, it's not the same like manage the country.
Maybe it has truly helped him manage the country and the war.
Maybe
it has really come in handy.
Point.
But what about you? Will you pursue acting or other venues related to comedy?
You mean, am I thinking to be like an... to film in some
film,
comedy or something?
TV roles, comedy.
Yeah. I don't like
or
it.
Even like, do you know Jon Stewart in the U.S.? Do you ever thought of doing that kind of comedy, political commentary? Because you do so much political.
I worked in a couple of projects like that. Who like there is John Oliver show, and in Ukraine
right.
We have some kind of, we tried to do something similar as John Oliver, but about Ukrainian context. And I worked in this show and it was interesting, but not like a host, but a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like, I do comedy, I do stand up, and I don't host anything because I don't like to host when I have the script. I don't like work with the script when I have this, you know, measurements, what I can say, what I can't say. And I like the freedom. That's why I like stand up. And a lot of Ukrainians like stand-up because they like freedom, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This open genre. That's why I really hope that my stand-up comedy will be enough to have enough, you know, money for living, and I don't want to go to the TV and do some show, because in Ukraine it's difficult to make classic late night show, like in USA, because we don't have a lot of stars. Like in our country, the like Ukrainian stars and Ukrainian politicians, it's like a one world, because we mix it up. Even after Zelensky won the election, it mixed it up for 100%.
Oh, I see.
In Ukraine, politicians are stars, and the stars could become politicians. Everything mixed up. We don't have, like in USA, you can, like if you start to the late night show, I think in like for Jimmy Kimmel or any of them, for Fallon, you can have like a list of 100 people who could be interesting to talk, like the big stars. In Ukraine, like we can have, I think like maybe up to 20 the big stars, like everybody knows these guys. But then like on 20, one person, it become not so popular, one guy. Because it's, I don't know why, it's because maybe in Ukraine it's not a lot of money to make a super quality show business. That's why we made a lot of shows that looks like late night, but they were not so successful, like successful for audience. But for me, the guy who understand how it should work, who like to watch classic late night shows, I was watching that and thinking, nah, that's a bad one. It's like too simple. It's just too flat. That's not deep. It's not dark. Because a lot of the stars in Ukraine don't like to hear jokes about them. You know, I'm a star. I don't have irony at all. And that's why it's difficult to make a good late night in Ukraine. So we have some, obstacles to make this show. I mean, a hybrid late night show, like something similar, but not the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds dreadful that your politicians are your stars too. I mean, I you know, our politicians are funny, but they're definitely not comedic stars.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your writing process? How do you write jokes? This is a great mystery to me. It must be a gift from above.
It's also a mystery for me sometimes when somebody asks me how I write. Like if I know for sure how to write, I will not have so many problems to write new special, because I made this special. Every time when I have 1 hour special, I try to make it each year. And after each of them, I'm thinking, well, maybe that's all. Really? I don't know. A little bit перебільшую, little bit exaggerated. Yeah, I'm a little bit exaggerated. It's not so tragedy moment, but it's really difficult to find. It's not difficult for me to write a joke, because there are a lot of the like shims how to write the joke, like on three when you, I don't know, when you write a joke and you start to you name one thing, second thing, and the third thing should destroy your expectation, because we all know how this works. Like the joke should destroy your expectation. And it's not difficult to write jokes about some kind of news or something. But when you talk about comedy, about stand-up, for me, that's important to find something new. And when I write my jokes, I'm trying. It's super difficult. But I'm trying to like imagine this joke on international stage and understand, is it could be competitive there? Because just write some jokes to make people laugh in some kind of bar in Ukraine, that's not a big deal. Like I can write a lot of jokes about sex for an hour and it's not a big problem. But you trying to find something new, trying to find something deep in your soul to talk about difficult moments. Or if I write about war, I should find some kind of new angle, because people in Ukraine like to joke, and like Ukrainian nation is part of our like character. We like to laugh and cry. We're very emotional in Ukraine, and if we have any kind of situation like war problem, in the next day you will see hundreds of memes in Twitter and Instagram about these problems, because Ukrainians
have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, they like to provide humor. That's why for me as a comedian, it's difficult to find new angle when I start to write about war, for example. Like as I remember, I saw one of the interviews with one of the guy, maybe it was with Kevin Hart, when he said that, or Chris Rock, they performed in one of Comedy Cellar with Chris Rock, and they tried to check some new material. They checked, and then Dave Chappelle came on the stage, and he started to talk, and Kevin Hart said, okay, I should throw away all that stuff that I wrote today because this is shit. I see the guy who tried to find the idea, not only a joke. So yeah, I'm just to have some notes in my smartphone, and I put some ideas that triggered me, or just sometimes I just put the line that not triggered me, but I think like this is important to talk about this problem for now. Like in Ukraine, sometimes we have this tension between people when we talk about language, because there is like a language problem in Ukraine. It's not a real problem, but Russian propaganda spends a lot of money to persuade Ukrainians that this is a problem. So I know, yeah, this is a problem, and I don't know how to, but I should to find the way to talk about this with jokes and to show the position. And just put in my smartphone this line, you should find something about the language. And I'm trying to notice something in people's communication or just in my daily routine that can help me to represent the situation. And then I, in the end of the day, I can sit on the laptop and check my notes. I have like 8 notes. Okay, let's try to develop them. And I try to develop. Thinking about, as I said, most of the time I just start to thinking about the problem. I become sad because of that and just crying and fall asleep. But sometimes I found something funny. And yeah, at the beginning of my career, we have this tradition, like a comedy buddy communication. Like when you have a comedy buddy, you can speak with him, you can try to develop his jokes.
I'll bounce jokes off of him,
yeah,
right?
Bounce jokes.
I think comedians everywhere do that, don't they? That's a tradition of comedians.
That's a good one. This is the best. I think it's a good way to develop your material. But like for the last like 3 years or 4 years, I just stopped doing that because I'm just start to think I should listen someone for an hour. I don't wanna. I can use this hour to write my own jokes. It's enough for me. And for now, I can. With other comedians, we can help each other maybe like once in a half year to communicate and to check something, because I'm become more confident that I can write by myself. And for now, I'm just start thinking, no, if some kind of other guy will add some jokes from his point of view in my material, I will feel like, oh, it's something not mine in my thinking. And this is strange, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. Чужие, like the
foreign.
Oh, you know Ukrainian?
Well, I thought that sounded familiar. Чужие.
Yeah, foreign, like foreign stuff in your home. Yeah. That's why it's strange. But maybe it's my problem because I have a lot of the jobs. Because in Ukraine, it was always difficult to have enough money from comedy to live in. So I had like 4 jobs, 5 jobs and stand-up comedy because I like it. Yeah, my jobs was connected to comedy stuff like screenwriting or mm-hmm, something mm-hmm. or radio stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but you have not so many time for yourself, for your material. That's why you're thinking I better will spend this time with myself, not with other guy who can help, but maybe also not help because mm-hmm. of his bad mood or something. Yeah, so I'm writing. I have a discipline. I should write. I should write in a month at least like 15 or 20 minutes of new jokes. But now, like, we're talking about interesting moment in my life because I'm become so big comedian in Ukraine, and I didn't expect I become so big like star in Ukraine, and now I have all this marketing moments I should do, like give interviews.
You've become a brand.
Yeah, branding myself. I don't like it because of this.
It's show business. I know.
Yeah, this stupid show
it's
business.
The dark side of show business. Yeah.
It's it take too much time from mm-hmm. my life, and I don't have enough time to write jokes. I should think how to make some advertisement with some brands, like to go to a podcast, you know.
For example.
Do all this.
You should be home writing jokes and instead also, of talking to me right now.
And also you have war, and you always should find the way how to earn more money to your army, volunteering stuff. I'm trying to use all my awareness for that, because I'm using my Instagram to raising money all the time for different raises, because The war is very long, and at the beginning I thought, oh my god, we raise like million hryvnias, like from
that's how many dollars?
Million hryvnias is like how many? 30? No. Something around $25,000.
And it went for the Ukrainian military.
Yeah, I raised it from one kind of show or something, or from the tour, and was like for my first tour I raised 1 million. From my European charity tour I raised, oh, I forgot how many, like 3 million as I remember. From this show, from this tour, my last tour, and this big show from the Palace of Ukraine and other cities, I raised a little bit more than 4 million hryvnias. So it means like $100,000. And from the beginning of the war, you think, oh my God, 1 million is so much, it's so a lot of money, you can buy that and that. But then, like for now, after these 2 years, million hryvnias is nothing, because you should buy more and more stuff and more difficult stuff, and our army become better, but also Russian army become better. They also have drones and a lot of drones, and we have drones, and you should have more drones because this is drone war now.
Is that what the money you raised is being spent on, buying drones for the Ukrainian?
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. Sometimes it's drones, sometimes it's... the most popular one is drones, cars, medical stuff, medical cars, and some medical equipment. From this special, yeah, I also bought this first time using this foundation, City Capital Foundation, we bought this FPV 434. As I remember, it's a British machine that helped to evacuate other machines from the battlefield. So we bought that, and we bought Snatch. It's also a British machine that helped evacuate soldiers, not the machines. So, yeah.
I watched your comedy specials, your English comedy specials, and I believe they were in a smaller club, not the big... Like the Palace like of Culture, but more small comedy club.
It's a super special basement because my first... Okay, finish your
question. Well, I'm just curious, how is it a different experience telling your jokes in English than in Ukrainian? Yeah. What is the reaction from the audience like as well? Is it different?
Yeah, to answer to this question, I should give you a lot of the context of this moment, because in Ukraine we have not a lot of English open mics or English shows, and that was my first time in life experience when I perform in English for the crowd. Before that, I had only like, as I remember, maybe one improvisation with the guy in the Ukrainian club because he was a foreigner and we spoke a little bit because. My English, I have this level of English because I was on work and travel program in USA for a summer. We have this program for students. You can go to USA, work there.
Where did you go?
Oh, I was in a Wisconsin Dells.
Really?
Yeah, this small town with a lot of aqua parks. Yeah, and but in the end of the summer, we decided our mission was to, all of the mission of the work and travel program is to like to see other culture and also improve your language skills. Mm-hmm. That's why I work in a hotel as a front desk manager. It was mm-hmm. super difficult for me for the first month. I was like always, I'm sorry, I'm from Ukraine. I don't understand what you want.
But Wisconsin people are nice. They must have been nice to you.
People in America were super nice to me, I must say. They never yelling like, are you stupid Ukrainian? Book me a room, you idiot. No time in any moment of that. And yeah, I worked as front desk manager. I also worked in Walgreens at the corner of Happy and Healthy.
Oh, wow.
If you have a sponsor in your podcast, sorry, I did it for free. You can cut it if you need. And also I make like tattoos for people, temporary tattoos.
You're a tattoo artist?
Temporary tattoos.
Oh, okay. All right.
You just use painting, you know.
Right.
I can't paint at all, but I just pretend I can't. And I learn how to. Because like, I must say a little bit other theme, but when I came to USA, for me, it was like kind of dream. I'm from the small village in Ukraine. My parents, when I come to my village from the Kyiv, from the university, and said, Mom, Dad, I have a chance to go to USA during with work and travel program, we just need $2,000 for all the documents, tickets, and all the stuff. And I will work there for a summer and come back to Ukraine and bring more money. And my father was like, no way. It's kind of fraud stuff. I think people just lying to you and they will take your money and don't think about that. And I spent a week to convince my parents that this official program, and they, okay, they give me half of the money on this program. Half of the money I raised by myself because I had a job in university. Yeah. And at, in the end of the summer, we raised some money, but we decide probably this is the last time we're in USA because it's very expensive travel for Ukrainian. So we decided to take part of the money and have a trip. And I was in on Niagara Falls. I was in Washington, in New York, and even in Miami. Because in USA, this is, was so easy to buy a car. buy a car, you just buy some Ford.
Oh, so you drove to those places?
Yeah, we have seven. We just have a team, like seven people, because a lot of Ukrainians worked in this Wisconsin Dells town. And we phoned seven people, and we bought a car for $2,000 or something. So we just... each of us spent like $300 on this car. And we took this car and go to all the cities. Yeah, for like 2 days in each city and come back to Chicago. And we put this car on Craigslist. We sold this car. And this is my, like, I very...
Ukrainian ingenuity.
I'm very proud the way how I sold this car because we put it on the Craigslist. Yeah. And we was hope to, we bought it for $2,000. We was hope to sell at least for $1,000 or $800 or something. And one of the women come to us with, she's a friend, and they say, yeah, it's a nice car, but we can give you only $200 because it's like, it has problems here, problems here. And we have only 1 day before the flight. So it was our last deal. And I said to my friend, Zhenya, who was a driver all the time, I said, come on, this is too cheap. For me, it's better to leave this car on the parking lot, but don't give to these people because this is too less. They try to fool us. I don't like this feeling. And he was like, yeah, okay, it's fine. And we said, no. And we go back to the hotel, and this woman called back to us in 1 hour and said, okay, 700. And we're like, okay.
There you go.
So we won.
Good negotiator.
Yeah, good negotiators.
And you learned English there. That's how you learned your English.
Yeah, work and travel program helped me to, like, my English not perfect, but I know, like, I'm not afraid to talk and do mistakes. That's the main, I think, a good side of this program. They teach me that you just should to talk. And if you work in hotel, you just need to know a couple of phrases, like, this is my bed, I'll fix it up. Two main phrases. And also the word stuff, you can name all the thin stuff. Yeah, any day stuff, you know, day stuff. It helps
it's
a lot.
Very useful word, yeah.
Super useful word for me. Yeah, this is how I broke this language barrier. But I didn't perform in English, but I have this dream. Sometimes, like every comedian in Ukraine dream to have a special on HBO or Netflix on somewhere like that. And the war began. And Russians tried to capture Kyiv, and they retreated in April, as I remember. And after Russian retreated, we thinking maybe we could try to do some shows, like first comedy shows in basements, in like small basements, to raise some money or just to cheer up people because it was a mess in Kyiv in this first month. And my friends said, okay, we're gonna do some show. Do you wanna take a part? And I was like, I don't know, I don't have material. Like, I don't wanna give my old jokes. This is so stupid to, you know, talk about your past and death moment. And I skipped first show. On the second show, I came, and it was like 40 people in the crowd and 10 comedians, and everybody has for like 4 minutes, 5 minutes of material. And it was like one of the best shows in life because you people, how comedy works. Comedy helps, and the comedy helps to, you have some tensions in your brain, in your body, and joke help you to laugh. And through this laugh, you, how to say, выпускаешь, типа, Let it go, this tension from your body. And just imagine 40 people who lived 2 months at the war, and they came to comedy show first time for this period, and they heard jokes, nice jokes from nice guys, and they laughed so hard, and because they had so many tension, and this small basement, that's why you hear all the sounds, and it was like this super powerful wave of laugh. My performance was not so, like, it was fine, but other comedians were more, I think, powerful on this evening, and I was like, oh shit, I should become better comedian during war. I should become better war comedian. And after this show, I realized, okay, we can try to do some small shows to raise money. But also I noticed that, yeah, Ukrainians donate a lot, and that's understandable that there is no job now in Ukraine, so we should find other way to raise money. And I started to think, okay, there is foreigners people, and we can ask money from them. How I can ask this money in an interesting way? Probably I'm a comedian. I know English a little bit. So I could try to do some comedy in English. And in the end of this clip, ask people to donate on Comeback Alive Foundation and Pretulas Foundation. And I start to write some jokes in English. First time in my life. I was not sure, is it funny? But I, for that moment, I had a couple of friends from New York. They have this podcast, Last in America podcast. They spoke with comedians from different countries. And I wrote to them and asked, guys, I tried to do some material in English. Can you just check, is it funny in English at all? Because I don't understand. And nobody can help me better than you because you're comedians. And they read this material and they said, yeah, this one is fun, this one probably not, you can try maybe develop it. And I said, okay, yeah. And I have this program for like 15 minutes or something, and I wrote it in like 3 or 4 days, and I was nervous, but I thinking I have a war now, I could die like in the next month, so I should try to do my English special English material now, because maybe in future I will not have this opportunity. And I said to organizers of this, our small basement comedy shows, I want to perform in English just one day before the show. And he said, okay, you can try. And so people who came to the show, they came to Ukrainian show and they didn't know I would perform in English because it was too difficult, too much chaos in Kyiv to organize separate events in English. So I just decided to write these jokes and just go to this closed basement mic and check.
You assume some of the audience would understand English?
Yeah, I was hoped that most of people in Kyiv understand English, and I tried to write my jokes in understandable way, mm-hmm. because my English also not like, I don't know slang. I know basic words. So I hope this basic jokes will be understandable. But yeah, it was a risk that people will not understand. And I had jokes about that at the beginning of the show. Like, if you don't know English, you should just laugh when the man who know English laughs. Just follow this guy who know English. This is the best way to react on my show. Yeah, and I was not sure it will work at all. But it was great. Like, the reaction was super nice. And it was so interesting for a moment, because it was my first performance in English. For a moment, I just realize myself like in Comedy Cellar or somewhere, because I'm talking English, you know, people laugh from English jokes. I have this some kinds of jokes about Jimmy Fallon, so or something, like living my best comedy life in my head. And reaction was super good. I was like, okay, reaction is pretty nice. I can cut a couple of bad moments. But in general, I thought, okay, we can put it on YouTube and on Twitter and Instagram. And in Twitter, this video becomes super viral. Like, I just take like 3 or 4 jokes as a trailer of this comedy on YouTube. I put it on Twitter and it's become viral. And in one moment, I noticed that Dara O'Brien is Irish comedian, retweeted this one and he wrote, this is funny. And I was like, no way, it's not a bot. It's
real. Must have felt so great.
Yeah. I wasn't like a super big fan of O'Brien. I know he like a super world famous comedian. And I showed this like retweet to my friends, comedian friends, and then they was like, no, that's not true. And I say, yeah, that's true. This is the guy, he has 6 million followers. And it was like, that's why a lot of comedians start to hate me in Ukraine because I had this moment. And yeah, and a lot of the people from different countries, like I saw these comments on YouTube and people from China, from, I don't know, Poland, Denmark, from different countries, they wrote, yeah, this is funny, thank you. And I hope in the end of this video, there was like link for donation stuff. And I hope they donate. I didn't ask them to show me like print screens, but some people share that, yeah, I sent like $100, $50. And I was like, oh my, that's cool. And then I did one more video in English. I thought, okay, first time I made this one, it become viral, but I don't know how much I collect because I didn't like put my PayPal information, I just put foundation information. And I think on the next video, I will do the same, but I will give my PayPal because to see how much money, and also maybe 20% I will take for myself to have some money for living. And from my next video, I can count, I raised like $4,000 or something from this video, from the second one. And I send it to Pritula's, not to Pritula. Yeah, I have like military friends and I send them for their requests.
Money from all around the world came in.
Yeah, this is on the second video. From the first video, I don't know how much I collect. But yeah, for me, the feeling was amazing when people laughing from your English joke, like people from all the world, you start to think, oh my God, my joke is funny, like for international audience. Oh,
what
shit.
A great
oh
feeling.
My God. Yeah, this is a great feedback.
And they're giving money.
And they're also giving
to
money.
To support. I mean, that's the greatest affirmation.
I had this feeling, maybe because it's because of the war, like maybe if it was just a video without war context, maybe we'll not donate or something. But it was amazing. But the funny war Ukrainian moment of this experience, when I saw this Twitter repost from Dario Brin, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. I started to jump in my flat in the center of Kyiv. I rent a flat there. And then in 40 minutes after that, Russian missile hit the building. And I talking about that experience in my next video. Hit the building. Just
oh, where the discount.
About discount flat. Yeah,
so you wanted to get a discount on your rent because the missiles were hitting the building. Yeah, that's funny.
No discounts because of missiles.
That's funny.
Just 40 minutes after this experience with Dario Brin, I heard this in this vibration from the ground. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh shit, I should go to the basement. And I was so happy. And in 40 minutes, I become like afraid that I could die or something. And this is, if you wanted to imagine the life in Ukraine, well, just imagine these emotional jumpings when you have the most the greatest achievement in your career for the moment, Dario Brin retweeted you, and then Russian missile.
And you have to run for your life.
And run for your life.
So it's incredible what you have to go through.
I hope that I will have some time to write some new English material, but it's... That's difficult to do it in Ukraine, like to write some jokes in English. You should check because this material, I didn't check that. I just write something from the first time, go to the show, just talk, give the joke for the people. And I was hope they will laugh and they left. So I have this lucky moment. But in future, if I want to have some kind of special or some kind of content understandable for people in the world, I should perform, like, for example, I should perform in USA to check my jokes in these comedy clubs to understand from which point Americans will laugh so hard. Because on this video, on my performance in Ukraine, there's Ukrainians laughing. And some people on the video will laugh too. But to understand more deeply, I should be abroad. But I'm a man and I'm a young man and I'm a handsome man, so I can't be abroad for a long time because some military officers will say, Anton, you should come back. You stay too long there. So for me, it's difficult to check my material abroad. But it gave me this experience, gave me the understand, not only for me, it gave understanding for me and for my colleagues that Ukrainian comedy could be represented on international area and it could be funny. And our experience, Ukrainian comedian experience, is super unique. As you said at the beginning, there is no comedians who can perform during war. That's why our content should be, I think, interesting. And if some guys from Netflix or HBO listen to this podcast, you can come to Ukraine. And not only me, we have like comedians who know English even better than me, and they can perform in English and can do some jokes in that. And maybe this content could be interesting even more than David Beckham's biography on Netflix now.
So our Netflix listeners, please pay attention here. I think it's proof that the world wants to hear more from Ukrainian comedians. There's obviously in the West we hear spokespeople from Ukraine, your ambassadors, your military spokespeople, the president, of course. But I think that was proof that there's a demand. The success and the virality of your videos is proof that there is a desire to hear more from Ukrainians, and not just about military objectives or political, but real life. And no one can do that better than a comedian.
I also afraid that a long war, and I understand that people in the world tired because of this war, and maybe there are a lot of people who don't want to hear more about war in Ukraine because they have their own problems. From this point of view, for me, it is difficult to write new jokes because my Ukrainian jokes, most of them are not, they will not work in English because, not because of the translation, but because of the context, because I'm joking about like war moments. My observational comedy differs a lot from observational comedy of American comedian. And to understand my observational comedy jokes, you should live under Schellen at least half of the year, and right, then you will laugh.
Right.
And that's why I shoot these jokes from these videos, my first one videos. It was like basic information about war, jokes about Zelensky, about international help. But now you should go deeper. And that's why it's more difficult to understand what kind of my jokes will be understandable and which kind of jokes have too much context and it's understandable for Ukrainians. That's why you should check it on foreigners, and it's difficult because of logistic. So yeah, I understand that this content could be interesting for sure for people in the world, but a lot of the difficult moments to prepare this. And as I said, if there is the people like content owners or streaming owners who wants to have this material, they should help me and other comedians to give us this chance to check this material, to help us develop this one. Yeah, because just go to my home, write some jokes in English, put it on YouTube and hope that this video will have 1 million views, that's not a real situation.
I want to ask you about your experiences with one of my heroes, David Letterman.
Yeah. Okay.
And now that I know that he had come here and did his interviews, yeah, and tell me how it came about that you were invited. It was in a bunk. It was in the subway, if I'm not mistaken, right? It
was the interview was in the subway, but I met David. He came
during air raid sirens. I mean, there was literally missiles coming in, and you were down in the subway to be safe during the interview.
Oh, I forgot.
Which is unusual for comedy, you have to admit. That's a unique thing.
I forgot that for you that's something unusual. For me, like, very unusual. You're always in the basements because missiles and sirens all the time. Yeah, he took this interview, Zelensky interview, in a railway station on Maidan of Independence Station.
Where we are, actually, right now.
Oh, yeah,
now.
We're very close to where we are. Street, on Khrushchev Street, yeah. And also, yeah, he came to our club, and our club also in the basement, that's why it was safe. Yeah, for me, this also was a kind of shock, and I didn't believe when one of the guys just wrote me a message, like, in the evening. He said, hey, Anton, there is Der Detterman in Ukraine, and he wants to talk with you. And I was like, it's like some kind of prank on what's going on. No, yeah, I need proofs that you know him and that he is in Ukraine. And he sent me the photo on from the Golden Gate. And I was like, okay, it's not like Photoshop, I think, or very quality one, Photoshop. And I was like, oh, he want to talk with me. Why with me? And he said, because he watched your English videos. And I was like, oh, my God,
there we
it worked. This is the way it worked. And I was like, okay. And they asked me to write some jokes in English also. And they want to film a small interview with me. And David want to perform on our stage, in our club for a couple of minutes. And also they will film some of my jokes in English. I was so nervous and I wrote some jokes at night. And I must say, most of them were bullshit. Honestly, because I did, as I said, like first videos, I have this basic information I could joke about. And then I tried to go deeper. It was a little bit more difficult. But yeah, but a couple of jokes was nice. And also, like I had, my plan was to make a small roast of David Letterman because I know
he likes this kind of jokes.
Yeah, he can take it. But producers said to me, better not, you better not. And I was like, okay. And on the stage, I had this moment, like I was a couple of seconds, I'm thinking, should I do it even if they say no, or should I not? Because maybe if I will do this stuff, they will cut me off from Netflix and it could be the bad moment. So I decided to, okay, I can tell this joke for you.
Yes, please. And then hopefully David Letterman will hear this podcast.
Yeah, I hope, I try to remember. That's fine. As I remember, I thinking to start from, David Letterman in Ukraine, this is a big moment. As you see, Lend-Lease is working, but we asking for a weapon, but they sent us only this old guy. The main weapon, which is heart attack or something like that.
That's good.
And also the second one that I like, the Letterman, because he very looks like Ukrainian, because he also looks like that he can die in any second.
I'm sure he would like these jokes. Yeah, I'm sure he would have liked them then too.
Second one I like a lot. And I was like, yeah. And also I had a joke I use in my performance, but they didn't take it in video, that the Letterman is so old, like he looks like that he remembers the first Lend-Lease. Yeah. And I sometimes, like, I have, I must say, every comedian have some kind of mental problems, I think. my problem is I never feel satisfaction about my work, and I will think you could do it better. Or
Artist sounds like a true artist.
And after this Netflix experience, I was like, oh no, I didn't give the best jokes about David. I gave only these neutral jokes about war, and David was not like, I think, shocked about these jokes. It was just like usual jokes. And I was like, oh, no, I think now he don't think I'm a good comedian. And I had this feeling until now, I think. I'm really happy I give the jokes in this podcast, maybe in somehow he will hear.
I will make sure we tweet this to David Letterman so that he hears that. You know, I think Americans will be surprised to learn how well known so many of our comedians are here. I mean, legendary ones, like I've mentioned Richard Pryor, we've talked about
all those guys.
Jimmy Fallon. Is it that you and your community is very familiar with American comedy, or are Ukrainians in general familiar?
Ukrainians in general know a lot of the guys. Yeah, for sure, our comedians community, they know more deep about all these guys. We watch documentaries about Comedy Cellar or something. But also, like sometimes on YouTube, when you put some your material on YouTube and you read comments, and people can write something like, yeah, it looks like Stuart Lee, or it looks like Carlin a little bit, or it's a shit, only Carlin is one comedian I like, and you all are nothing. Or Dave Chappelle. People know Dave Chappelle, people know Chris Rock, I know, because of Netflix or just because people interested in comedy. In Ukraine, like the country where a lot of the guys, like the big part of the economy is people who work in IT, in IT specialists.
This is a, one of the most advanced countries in the world for IT. It's incredible. I know that from Hollywood. We send a lot of our Hollywood films here for special effects.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
CGI and things like that. So
and we have this government in the phone, as you know, DIA.
That's right. Yeah. You guys are, this is a very advanced country
and
when
I
it comes
think
to
this
technology.
Is the reason why so many people know a lot of comedy, American comedy or just West comedy, because this people as IT specialists, they know English very well and they like this content. They like West content because they work with West companies a lot of the time. That's why I think they also searching for content, like this type of content. So they watch a lot of special on Netflix or HBO or something. That's why in Ukraine, like stand-up, I'm sure that stand-up in Ukraine will become like the most popular comedy genre, because a lot of the young people start to do comedy and a lot of the young comedians on open mics I can see now.
I'm sure you inspire a lot of young comedians.
I hope so. I hope so, because I'm always super tired on all my interviews and maybe they thinking, I don't want to have this kind of life. Yeah, he is famous, but he looks like a shit all the time. I don't want to be that.
Yeah, but he knows David Letterman personally. Yeah, there's some perks with being a comedian.
Also, many comedians hate me for that. But also we have Vasily Baidak, is very famous, also Ukrainian comedian. And he's a big fan of Letterman, and he's a big fan of David, for Andy Kaufman. He has his books and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And he was abroad on the charity tour when Letterman came to Ukraine. And when he knew that I spoke with Letterman, he was so jealous. He's sober for like 30 years. And he said, Anton, maybe this is the moment I will start to drink because of this. But then, maybe you know, maybe you're not, that the other, this famous British comedian came to Ukraine. Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry
came to Ukraine. And
yes.
My friend, Vasily Baidak, my colleague, comedian, he performed on one of the events when Stephen Fry was a host in Ukraine. And he took Stephen Fry to our club, and also Stephen took interview from Vasil, and also he spoke with us a couple of moments. And yeah, that's why with Vasil we have this like scores, like 1-1. I have Letterman, he has he has Stephen Fry, and Stephen Fry also. I should say that David was so open, and I didn't feel, because I was thinking maybe he's a super famous person. Maybe we all like...
he's a Midwesterner. He's totally down to earth.
Totally what?
He's a Midwesterner. He's totally down to earth. He's from the Midwest.
What does it mean, Midwesterner?
You know yourself. You were in Wisconsin. We're friendly.
Simple people.
We're friendlier.
Yeah, open one.
We are. I have a couple questions I'm just dying to ask you. Hecklers. How do you... That has always been one of the reasons I could never consider doing something like that. How do you handle the hecklers? And I know every comedian has their horror story. Do you have mean hecklers here in Ukraine for your performances? Because in the U.S. it can be brutal.
They
throw things at you. I mean, it's really...
Yeah, they can throw. I didn't. Hecklers didn't throw stuff at me. I have colleagues who had this kind of experience. I didn't. And like my comedy is, as I said, I like to joke about politician stuff, about some problems. That's why my audience is, as I think, like educated enough to not throw something in my head. I have a lot of hecklers. Like you always have hecklers in comedy. It's a basic moment to work with heckler. And I can say like I'm a super professional and I, you know, always find a funny way to joke about this guy. But Most of the time I know how to deal. Like the last one, that was easy battle. Like the guy, I had this show for 500 people, and the guy from the like last row like yelling something like you're not funny. I was like, I'm sorry, I don't hear this, poor people, you should have some money to buy tickets in the first row and give some shit.
So you asked about timing. That's comedic timing. Yeah. Right, you didn't write that ahead of time. You just like that. That's a genius skill.
You're too poor to talk with me. Like, just raise that's some beautiful money, and you can, and you can.
Or what also a beautiful response! Yeah,
I like in this tour I have, and it's too much, maybe too much context, but I'll try to tell the story. I have a show in Ivano-Frankivsk, and in my special I have one of the moment when I talk about nuclear bombing. It's kind of material in Ukraine. I joking about nuclear bombing, all this stuff. Yeah. And in Ukraine, we have this like a meme that some kind of people said, if a nuclear bombing will be, we will go to the orgy party on the mountains hills just to, you know, have the orgy on the last day. And I have jokes about this orgy, that this is a bad idea to go to orgy for the last day, because a lot of the people will go to this orgy for the first time. Nobody likes this orgy with Novichki. With newcomers. Nobody likes newcomers orgy. Nobody knows how to deal. Is it, it's already booked. I'm sorry. Okay. you know, try to find. And I have a lot of jokes about that. And I give these jokes, and the guy from the first row start to tell, excuse me. He just like, excuse me. Your joke is so, not intellectual. Everybody said that Anton Timoshenko is intellectual comedian, intelligence comedian, but you're just joking about this stuff. And I was like, but it's because I'll start from this, but then you will hear, okay, what's going on? And I was like, it's first time somebody said to me that I'm not boring, but too stupid, like, too stupid comedy. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And then when I have this moment and I'm talking about orgy party, I ask his name, his profession, and I put his in this party, and people fucked this guy on my orgy party, and people laughed so hard because I put it. Now it's funny for you, right? Now it's not stupid. And it was fine. For me, it was nice. I opened this new way to joke, to work with hecklers. You can put him in your material if you have some kind of material when you like have orgy or something. You can put the guy in in this situation.
Smart.
For example, like that. I tried to work.
I was listening to your English comedy special, and there was one joke that was funny, but it also brought a tear to my eye. And I really wanted to ask you not just to talk about it, but to tell the joke better than I will. It's you describe a son comforting his mother. The son lives in the city, I'm assuming Kiev, the mother in the village, and the mother calls and says, son, there's rockets flying in the sky. Yeah. And the son says to the mother, don't worry, mama, they're coming towards me.
Yeah.
Not you.
It's not in your small village. It's in Kiev. Don't worry. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, that's obviously the kind of joke that's, you know, you can understand here in Ukraine now. And how did you come up with that? And how has the reception been when you talk about themes like that?
That's super difficult to talk, to write these jokes, but I understand that the comedy is the only way I can beat this situation. And this is comedy is the only way I can defeat death. You know, when you laugh about death, that sounds like you defeat death in some kind of way. And my special, a lot of the people after my last special, I have like this 1 hour and a half special, last one. Oh, it's called Na Meji, on the edge. My last special called On the Edge, because I'm joking on the edge. I mean, like a lot of dark humor and a lot of the jokes, I was not sure, can I say something like that? But I also feel I should say something like that. And people oftenly said that after my show, during my show, they laugh and cry, and like they had this both feeling, because I'm jumping from like orgy funny stuff to joke about death, to joke about some nuclear bombing, or about our tiredness about this war, about soldiers. So for me, honestly, like, this is the best comedy, when you have these two feelings. And as I remember, historically, there was no time, like, when these Greeks start to do some performances in theaters, there was no separation of tragedy or comedy. It was like dramedy all the time, mm-hmm. because to have this this feeling, or how to say in theatrical vocabulary, when you have this, ну коли ти смієшся і плачеш одночасно, і ти отримуєш в кінці катарсис. Yeah, you're so smart.
Yes, but not yes. in the math.
Not in the math. Forget
it. No.
You know this word catharsis?
Catharsis. Yeah. Yes.
To
very important.
To word. Get to the catharsis, you should have these both feelings: the yeah. nice feelings and the bad feelings. Yeah. And from this point of view, I think this is the best way to write comedy. But yeah, this is super difficult. And this is the why most of my time, I feel more depressed than, you know, funny. And but comedy, the way how I can beat these feelings, and I try to help people to laugh. And also I try to help myself, because when I try, I also have these thoughts about death or something. And comedy helped me to go through this. And I on one of the interview, I said that comedy in Ukraine for now, it's kind of mental vacation from the shelling. Just for an hour, you have this moment to laugh and mm-hmm. forget about
to
war.
To take you somewhere else.
Yeah, because on the street, you can't forget about war or something. And I don't know, but I'm sure that for the rest of my life, if I have more years in my life, if I will live up to 50 years or something, I will talk about war in my jokes for sure, because this war leave so powerful footprint in my mind, in my soul. That's why I can't imagine I will talking about some, you know, Instagram problems. No, I will always try to connect it with this kind of experience.
Well, you, I think, are a hero here in Ukraine, the way you've used comedy to raise money. Yes, yeah. Yes, of course. And but you're playing your role to help. And I just want to commend you for that. And I have to just ask one last question about the Bad Street Boys. Because I know you.
Because well, no,
I love the Backstreet Boys.
This is fun. You
and
know
you,
this.
You turned the Backstreet Boys into the Bad Street Boys. And if we could just finish with that, how on earth did that come about?
I should. Or I hope
I
you
want
understand.
It that. I'll have it that way. Is that the song?
Yeah. Okay. How to explain? Okay. First of all, when you have war for a long time, you always should raise money for your army. And obviously that people also, they in Ukraine, they don't have super lot of money and they spend some money, but in a year they probably will say, I'm sorry, but for now I have nothing. So you need to find the way to make them donate more. And just to ask people to donate on some like military stuff, it's become boring.
No,
I can't
speak
when I hear the sound.
The soundtrack.
It sounds strange, but people also could become boring to donate, and you need to find interesting way to make them donate. And we start to change some songs and make them funny, and using the songs to donate to raise more money on army. My friend Vasil Baidak, he started this. He was first who used one of the thorns. He changed the words to raise some money. And I start to think, okay, which kind of song could be so interesting and popular? People will share the thorn. It should be something super famous. And I think, oh, Backstreet Boys.
Of course.
Nobody in Ukraine
do a parody like on a boys band, and I have my friends, comedian friends. I have a singer, Vladimir Dantes, who has a nice voice, and we can collect these guys and try to make this parody song. We name our group as Bad Street Boys because it's a parody, and we change the words in this song. And this is a song about donation that we should destroy Russia. And it's so funny when you have this very kind song and you're talking about destroying other country. And it's the song becomes super viral. This our parody clip, and yeah, and we raise 7 million hryvnias.
Incredible.
From this song. Yeah, more than I from my whole my tour. Maybe it's better for me to make funny songs. You know?
The power of music and comedy together. Yeah, there's people, nothing like
and
it.
And people share know? This content, yeah. Because in Ukraine, that's for creative people, that's for artists, that's important to find the way how to make people donate more. And you understand that now, the moment in war, that you should, firstly, you should make interesting content and then add the military race context in this content. People can share it. It become viral. That's why you will raise more money. This is how it works.
That's incredible. In well, thank you, Anton. This has been an incredible conversation. And we will put in the information links to the donate to those funds. And I just want to thank you again for appearing on our podcast, Art During Wartime.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for that you have this idea to represent Ukrainian culture during the war. That's very
we all have to do what we can. We all do. So thank you again, Anton. Mm-hmm.